But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello, I'm at the Frostfire Investment Seminar, and with me is Nick Train, manager of the Finsbury Growth and Income Investment Trust. Nick, you're well known for your buy and hold approach, but you seem to have been making quite a lot of changes in the last year and a half. You know, we've seen quite a few new holdings, a shift towards what you call digital winners, and you've also sold all of your non-UK holdings. I mean, do you think this has been the busiest period in the trust history?
I don't know about the trust history, but you are right. There has been a heightened amount of activity. And, you know, I think that reflects a number of things. In part, you're right. We took a deliberate decision to exit a number of non-UK companies that we had investments in. And that was in response to just believing that enough was enough, that the long underperformance of the UK stock market had become ridiculous, and that we could invest in world-class companies in the UK that were trading on big discounts for no better reason than that they were listed on the London stock market. And we just felt that we had to respond to that. And that's a reason for some of those sales. But you're also right that over the last perhaps 2 years, me and my colleagues, we've been working on an idea or a theme which we think offers a significant, we hope offers a significant potential for capital gain. And that's identifying companies that are beneficiaries, to put it crudely, of artificial intelligence.
Okay.
And that's essentially companies that own or create unique data. And actually, there are quite a few world-class data and data analytics companies listed on the London stock market. And we've wanted to increase our exposure to some of those that we already owned, but also introduce some new names, which we hope are giving us a similar opportunity. And again, typically at big discounts to the way they're valued elsewhere. I'm going to mention a relatively new holding that's become a very big holding in the portfolio, which is Rightmove. Now, I'm going to guess everybody who's kind enough to be listening to this will know Rightmove. What an extraordinary business, not just by UK standards, by global standards. And, you know, just as one perspective on why Rightmove could be very, very interesting, the closest comparator to Rightmove in the United States, anyway, is a company called CoStar. CoStar's actually relatively recently bought a small competitor to Rightmove on the market. CoStar has been a successful growth company on NASDAQ, and as a result is valued on, I don't know, 60 times earnings or something of that magnitude. In the meantime, we've been able to accumulate a big holding in Rightmove on price earnings ratios in the low 20s. It's just such a stark contrast between the valuation you can get to in a hot tech bull market like NASDAQ and the sort of values that are still available in a market that people just aren't so enthused about. And I'm hoping by analogy, not just with Rightmove, but with other key companies that we have to this theme, like London Stock Exchange Group or RELX, that there's both more growth to come from the companies, but the potential for a re-rating as well. So that's another reason why activity in Finsbury has been higher than is usual.
Yeah. Just staying on Rightmove, you said in one of your recent fact sheets, it's unusual in that it is 100% UK business. You know, it's focused entirely on the UK at the moment. I mean, what do you think about the potential to Rightmove to kind of go global and become a kind of global success story? Is that necessary to the kind of to the performance case?
No, it's not. And I think that it's unlikely that Rightmove, for the foreseeable future, will make any attempt to diversify globally. And the crucial reason for that is it doesn't need to. The profit opportunity, the growth opportunity, being at the heart of the UK residential property market, it's such a big opportunity for this company. The current market capitalization of, I don't know, £4 to £5 billion, actually that's still very, very low potentially to the market capitalization we hope this company could command simply by continuing to offer more products and services to its estate agent customers, but also crucially more products and services to the, as you know, millions and millions of people who visit its website every day. What I will say about Rightmove, and we alluded to this earlier, and I think that this is important. People have been understandably jaundiced and pessimistic about the UK stock market. And there's lots of reasons, justifiable reasons for that. One of the reasons, I believe, is because UK institutions have been too willing to sell out of growth businesses at too early a period in their development. One thinks of, in hindsight, the embarrassment of UK institutions selling Arm to SoftBank in 2016. That, in hindsight, was an act of tremendous self-harm by the institutions who make up the London stock market. They sold the business at what they thought was a high price, but actually time has shown that it was not a high price at all. And to me, it was a significant moment in 2024 when Rightmove turned down the bid approach from the Australians, and Rightmove shareholders, including us, applauded. You know, applauded management for saying, no, this bid just doesn't begin to capture the potential for this company. We need more Rightmoves in the UK stock market, and we need institutions to back these companies to fulfil their potential.
Okay. So we've discussed, you've been making some of these changes. You know, some of that, I think you've said yourself, is in response to kind of underperformance over the last few years. I suppose, yeah, what do you need to happen now to turn around that recent underperformance? I mean, is it just strong performance from the underlying companies? Is it, do you think some of these companies are far too cheap and deserve a re-rating? Is it something else again?
Well, for Finsbury to perform better, we need two things to happen, really. We need the two key thematic ideas within the portfolio to work. And one of them is arguably working, but the other isn't. And probably we need both of them to progress.
And sorry, one of those is the one digital of those winners. What's the other? Sorry.
One of them is this data software technology platform idea. That's over 60% of the portfolio. But I do continue to have exposure to particularly global consumer branded goods companies. And that's where the pain, I'm sorry to say, for Finsbury shareholders has been felt over the last couple of years. In particular, we've delivered pain to our shareholders through our investment in Diageo, and also to a significant degree, Burberry. Now, listen, Burberry and Diageo's leading brands are truly globally resonant, important brands. There is no conceptual reason why Burberry and Guinness and Johnny Walker and Don Julio shouldn't be very successful growing brands. And I'm sure they will be. I'm sure they will be one day. But it's taken patience. Allow me just a little bit of very short-term gratification. Burberry reported results, which were better than people feared. And when I left my desk, the shares were up 20%. Thank goodness. It needs to go up much more than that. But I think that the performance of the business and the willingness of the share price to go up is that people do recognise that Burberry is a unique global brand. I think that, well, anyway, that's probably enough.
Okay.
But that's yeah. what we need to happen.
I mean, one thing I did want to ask is, you've recently got quite a lot of cash from the takeover of Hargreaves Lansdown. I think you've been buying more Rightmove. What else have you been spending that cash on? Have you been buying those consumer businesses, sort of, you know, doubling down on them, so to speak?
We've added to Diageo when we can, which is not all the time because it remains a very big position and there are limits on how much we can add. Predominantly, though, the cash that's resulted from that takeover has gone into the two most recent new holdings in the portfolio. And those, in alphabetical order, are Clarkson and Intertek. And I can talk at very great length about Clarkson and Intertek. But what I would say about those two companies, and please, if you're listening to this and you're interested, go and have a look at these businesses. These are two world-class companies that just happen to be listed on the London stock market. In a sense, they don't have to be. Their UK business is not that big. They are both global companies with global customers. They are the best or close to being the best at what they do in the world. And they've been highly successful over time as businesses and as shares. And the advent of the 47th president of the United States has in the short term hit their share prices.
Both
and that's an, yes. And that's an interesting opportunity, we think. And so actually that's where the bulk of that that cash has gone.
Okay. And Clarkson, was it a shareholder who mentioned that company to you? I think you...
Absolutely, it was.
Interesting.
A couple of years ago, we were talking to an audience and saying, we think that we want to own more UK companies that own or create unique data. And a shareholder came up to me and said, have you ever looked at Clarkson? Clarkson owns and aggregates more data on the global shipping industry than any other company in the world. And its data is really, really important. And although I was familiar with Clarkson, I wasn't that familiar with it. And looking more closely at the company, our shareholder was right. You know, this company, it's certainly a knowledge business and it's becoming a data business. And I think it could be a very, very interesting investment.
Yeah. I wanted to follow up on another observation you made recently. A French private equity firm called Tikehau, I'm probably pronouncing it wrongly, bought a stake in Schroders, the British asset manager, which you hold recently. And you made the observation, Schroders' market cap is something like double Tikehau's, and yet they manage more than 20 times more assets. I suppose, yeah, what is your takeaway from that?
My takeaway is that we've owned Schroders for too long and that it's not worked as an investment idea, and that I'm sorry about that. But it also signifies to me that Schroders is an attractive franchise with a global brand and attractive business economics that has become, I'm sorry to say, extraordinarily lowly valued. You could argue that all quoted UK fund management companies have become very, very lowly valued. And that may be so. But I think there's no question Schroders has the best franchise, the most diverse business. And if there is a jewel in the dust of UK fund management companies, to us, it's Schroders. And it's just so remarkable to see. I mean, I've nothing against Tikehau. In fact, I think their track record is admirable. But a £3 billion company buying a measurable stake in Schroders, and saying this is a very, very quality asset that's become undervalued. Put it this way, that's what you want to see. You want to see people in the industry who know it even better than we do taking a stake. And that's what's happened.
The relative difference in the market valuation is also clearly about, you know, all the interest in private equity. I mean, what do you make of the kind of private markets boom, you know, which our UK pension funds are also kind of being pulled into as well now?
I don't know that I've got anything very useful to say about it. I'm a public market guy.
Yeah.
I think all I would say is that I do regard myself at times as competing with private equity to maintain ownership of exceptional publicly listed assets. And I am and will continue to be concerned at the prospect of losing unique quoted assets to private equity. And, you know, one of the things we've said to Diageo, for instance, during this torrid period for its share price, is that even Diageo isn't big enough to be completely exempt from global private equity interest. I mean, Diageo is a little 50 billion market cap. I mean, by global standards, that's not very big anymore. And we absolutely want the executives and the board of that company to be focused on ensuring that long-term strategic investors like us in that company don't run the risk of losing it to an opportunistic private equity bid.
Okay.
So that's what I feel.
Very interesting. Last question from me, Nick, and something I've been asking all the fund managers today. You know, the investment trust sector is going through arguably a period of turmoil itself. You know, we've got wide discounts. You know, we've got activists coming in, of which Saba was the most high profile. I suppose, what do you think is the future of the investment trust sector?
Listen, to the extent I have any influence, I encourage my children to invest in investment trusts. And to me, it's just such an obvious thing to do. You get distinctive investment strategies, often at lower costs, with the possibility of investing in those unique strategies at a discount to market value. And you know that historically, those discounts narrow and widen, and that's just a market cycle. There has always been activist interest in investment trust, maybe not to the current intensity, but to me, that's a design feature. You know, it's not a flaw. You know, the feature is that if investment trusts don't do a good job for their shareholders, there's a market sanction. And, you know, we should be subject to that as well. You know, I've been running an underperforming strategy. I'm not, you know, I feel very strongly there is a sanction and it's protective of investors. So I would say to people considering where to allocate their precious savings, the investment trust industry looks more attractive than ever right now.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting note to finish on, Nick. Thanks very much. Good to speak to you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
landed. Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web. Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.